я польського роду, я ходила боса з роду, гей, 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 я ходила боса з роду, гей, 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 я ходила боса з роду, продай мені дві телиці, купи мені дві спідниці, бо я польського роду, я ходила боса з роду, гей, 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 я ходила боса з роду. Мило купувати, нічим хаті запалити, ніщо дітям і зварити. Гей, 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 ніщо дітям і зварити. Гей, 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 ніщо дітям і зварити. Поліз милий на гору, дістав ховати дугу, притягає додому, затягає на милу. Гей, 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 затягає на милу. Гей, 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 затягає на милу.
Traditional Ukrainian folk song "Kupa Meni Cherevechke," buy me boots, and that is a song that I have absolutely no artist information for you. I don't actually even know how it ended up in the Nash Holos Music Library, but it did, and I thought it was just delightful, and so wanted to share it with you. And one of these days, I will track down the information because it's a song worth repeating here on Nash Holos. But for now, that's what you got: "Kupa Meni Cherevechke," buy me boots. Вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопередачу «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння. З вами Пелвіна Макворі. Дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there and welcome to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm your host, Павліна. Thank you so much for tuning in. We've got a great program lined up for you. We have more news from Ukraine, courtesy Ukraine Today, as well a special feature commentary by the BBC, and that comes to us courtesy Keith Perron of PCJ Radio. So stay tuned for all of that as well. We've got our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And coming up next is a song by a Canadian group from Calgary. And this is a young polka band that released their album about 4 years ago. And recently, one of the founders has branched off into a career as a blues musician. And we had a feature interview with him on the Nanaimo edition of the show. So if you want to check out that interesting little twist, just check out the podcast to the August 24th edition of Nash Holos at www.nashholos.com. Meanwhile, here is Jeto Now with a song called Ivanku Johnny.
Пішла б він до тебе, земна вода кладку. Пішла б він до тебе. Do you want to listen to Nash Holos without using your web browser? Well, it's very easy. Download Stitcher's Smart Radio for iPhone and Android.
Ukrainian Jewish Heritage is a bi-weekly series sponsored by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter based in Toronto, featuring stories of Ukrainians and Jews working together in solidarity and harmony to restore and strengthen centuries-old bonds and affinities nearly destroyed by hostile outside forces in the bloody 20th century and even today. Tune in next week for another episode of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio.
На вулиці скрипка грає, басу де вимовляє. Мене мати не пускає, на вулицю бояти. Пусти мене, моя мати, на вулицю бояти, з паруками жартувати. Мене мати не пускає, на вулицю бояти.
From Philadelphia, that is an Eastern European women's vocal ensemble that goes by the name of Svitanya, and that is one of their Ukrainian numbers on this CD called First Light, Svitanya, and the song was Na Vulitsi, on the sidewalk. Up next, Paris to Kiev, and they hail from Winnipeg. This is from their CD Variances. It is called Dance One. Now, the latest news stories from Ukraine, courtesy Ukraine's first international English news channel, Ukraine Today.
One Ukrainian soldier killed, one more was wounded near the village of Marinka in Donetsk region. According to ATO headquarters, Russian-backed separatist forces attacked the positions of Ukrainian army 48 times during the night. The hottest point was Avdiivka to the west of Donetsk. Terrorists shelled the town three times using self-propelled guns. During the last 24 hours, Russian-backed separatists are reported to have shelled 170 missiles, including those of 152mm caliber. Meanwhile, in occupied city of Donetsk, Russian-backed authorities prepare new provocations. Terrorists are said to spread leaflets about Ukrainian army offensive. According to the analysts from NGO Informatsiyny Sprotiv, that is Information Resistance, propagandist messages are spread mainly by the workers of communal services. One Ukrainian soldier was killed and three more wounded in ATO zone in the past 24 hours. The murdered fighter, 41-year-old Oleg Dyachenko, served as a volunteer in the 15th Battalion of Ukrainian Armed Forces. He died in mortar shelling close to the village of Zaitsev in Donetsk region. According to ATO headquarters, the number of attacks from separatist side has doubled since last night. The town of Popasna in Luhansk region was also shelled from artillery systems. Missile fragments were later found close to the local secondary school. Russian-backed separatist forces attacked the positions of Ukrainian soldiers 54 times in the past 24 hours. This is according to ATO headquarters. After a relative ceasefire period in Luhansk region, the enemy renewed shellings. Terrorists reported to have launched 152mm artillery system close to the village of Tripilla. They also fired automatic mounted grenade launchers and heavy machine guns near the town of Zolote. The situation remained tense in the village of Stanitsa Luhanska, where the occupiers used infantry fighting vehicles along with mortars, rocket-propelled grenades and heavy machine guns to attack the village. In the Donetsk sector, the enemy fired heavy artillery systems on the village of Novobakhmutivka. In the Mariupol sector, Russia's hybrid military force fired 120mm mortars on the Ukrainian positions in the towns of Shirokine, Marinka and Krasnogorivka.
Kharkiv border guards have located 5 Russian reconnaissance systems operating 2.5 kilometers from Ukrainian border. The pieces of equipment were camouflaged. According to the border guards, the reconnaissance systems were large and fitted with satellite antennae. As soon as the Russian units realized they had been spotted, they changed their position. The equipment was detected again from the air, this time located 1.5 kilometers from the border. Ukraine is preparing a series of lawsuits in relation to Russia's violating international conventions. That's according to Pavlo Klimkin, Ukraine's foreign minister, who delivered a statement at the 12th meeting of heads of diplomatic mission in Kyiv on Monday. Klimkin urged the diplomats to do their best to protect Ukraine from Russian aggression. He said, in the nearest future, Ukraine will address the UN's International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea. The lawsuit against Russia will concern the illegal extraction of natural gas and oil from Ukraine's continental shelf in the Black Sea around the occupied Crimean Peninsula. Kyiv will also raise the issues of Crimean Tatars' rights violations and reveal facts proving Kremlin is financing terrorism.
Within the following weeks, we will be able to prove that Russia has violated all its obligations under the Convention for the suppression of the financing of terrorism.
Klimkin also said one of the priorities of the ministry's work is the release of political prisoners from Russian jails. Former Kremlin captives Hennady Afanasyev and Yuri Yatsenko were announced to become foreign ministry special representatives who will work to help free Ukrainians currently held in Russian jails.
Ukraine's disgraced former ruling party of regions used its assets to pay Larry King, U.S. renowned journalist. That's according to Serhiy Leshchenko, Ukrainian member of parliament from the Petro Poroshenko bloc parliamentary fraction. Editor-in-chief of the internet online publication Ukrainska Pravda, Sevhil Musaeva-Borovik, said, King has received those funds for an interview with the then Prime Minister of Ukraine, Mykola Azarov. Secret ledgers of Ukraine's disgraced former ruling party of regions show substantial amounts of cash listed for Paul Manafort, Donald Trump's current campaign manager. Manafort previously worked as a consultant for Ukraine's ousted President Viktor Yanukovych. The New York Times reported the ledgers revealed some $12.7 million in undisclosed cash payments designated for Manafort from 2007 to 2012. In a statement Monday, Manafort called the report unfounded, silly, and nonsensical. He added that he had never worked for the governments of Ukraine or Russia. The Ukrainian officials are yet to find out if Trump's campaign chief actually received the money.
All Ukrainians abroad should join efforts to counter Russian propaganda worldwide. At the meeting with representatives of the diaspora, President Petro Poroshenko urged Ukrainians from all around the world to unite and protect Ukraine. It is necessary to expand the circle of supporters of the country to work on keeping the sanctions against Russia and to exert pressure on this country from abroad to set Ukrainian political prisoners free.
It is time to put more efforts into influencing the public opinion abroad. You need to explain that Ukraine needs help with weaponry procurement. Moreover, we need it now, as tomorrow could be too late.
Ukraine celebrates the Day of the National Flag on August 23rd. A solemn ceremony took place on Sofievska Square in Kyiv. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko raised the blue and yellow national flag. Head of the state reiterated the need to restore Ukraine's sovereignty, stressing the flag must wave again over the occupied territories of Donbas and Crimean Peninsula.
It will prove to be an extremely difficult task ahead of us, getting our flag flying once again over Donetsk, Luhansk, Simferopol and Sevastopol.
Shortly after the ceremony, Poroshenko headed to Donbas. In view of the upcoming Independence Day, the president is set to give Ukrainian soldiers new military equipment. Meanwhile, other Ukrainian cities compete for the most outstanding flag presentation. Numerous windows on and around Dnipro City administration were decorated with small Ukrainian flags. The administration of the whole Dnipro region made a huge electrical flag, supposedly the largest in Ukraine. Constructed of 120 spotlights and 2,500 leads of blue and yellow depicting the Ukrainian flag can be seen from the plane above. Engineers say there have been problems with the color yellow, so they had to mix various other colors to make it work. The project was financed from private sources. The total amount of costs invested has been kept secret.
We want this flag to be seen from several thousand meters from above, so those flying over Dnipro could see it unfurling on the ground. No one has done anything similar before.
The residents of Odessa in southern Ukraine raised a flag of 25 meters long. The length is equal to the number of years of Ukraine's independence. People stretched a huge national flag along the stairway of Potemkin steps and carried it up to the monument of Duke de Richelieu. The orchestra of Ukrainian Navy performed a national anthem there in honor of the national symbol.
It's a traditional event. The flag becomes longer and longer every year, as well as the number of people participating in the action.
The holiday of Ukrainian national flag was established in 2004. The corresponding decree was issued by second Ukrainian president Leonid Kuchma. In 2009, Ukraine's third president Viktor Yushchenko made amendments to the decree, establishing an annual official flag-raising ceremony on August 23rd.
And with that, we've come to the end of this week's Ukraine News Roundup for this edition of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. To hear more news from Ukraine today, check all of this week's editions of Nash Holos at www.nashholos.com. And for their full roster of breaking stories, as well as interviews, press reviews, and in-depth analysis on Ukraine, follow Ukraine Today on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and their live blog, uatoday.tv. Ви слухайте радіопрограму «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам англійською мовою з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio, coming to you on the PCJ Radio Network from Vancouver Island in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. Traditional Ukrainian folk dance called the Arkan, that is the woodcutter's dance, and it is from the Carpathian Mountains. And that was performed on the Sopilka, which is a little wooden flute that is very common in that part of the world. And it was performed by a soldier at the front, one of many musical selections that is making its way back into the world as a symbol of the Ukrainian spirit that yearns for freedom. Again, that was on the Sopilka, the Arkan. Coming up next is a special documentary feature by the BBC. It comes to us courtesy Keith Perron of PCJ Radio. And this is a documentary that takes a look at the religious schism in the Orthodox Church in Ukraine today. And it is titled Faith on the Ukrainian Fault Line.
The village of Pticha in western Ukraine has found itself on the fault line of Ukrainian Orthodox Christianity. Families have fallen apart, friendships have been broken, all due to a schism within the Orthodox Church, which plays such a huge part in the lives of the people in this conflicted country. Although it's hundreds of miles away from the conflict in eastern Ukraine, and 2 years since the annexation of Crimea by Russia, Pticha's only church is a symbol of the major rift that has occurred between the two largest Ukrainian Orthodox churches, the much younger Church of the Kiev Patriarch and its larger, older brother, the Church of the Moscow Patriarch. I'm Olga Smirnova, and for Heart and Soul from the BBC World Service, I have come to Ukraine to explore how the Ukrainian Orthodox faith found itself entangled in the country's political conflict with Putin's Russia. Today, Pticha celebrates the Pentecost Day.
Pentecost is celebrated on the 50th day after Easter, and it marks the day on which the Spirit descended upon the apostles. This is one of the biggest celebrations in the Orthodox calendar.
Father Igor Zagrebelny, a follower of the Kiev Patriarch, is a priest without a chapel. He conducts his services in the church grounds, and when it's cold in winter, in a guard's house next to the church. An enormous lock has kept the front door of the village church shut for well over 2 years now, and now the side door has been shut from inside.
Trying to knock, but nobody's answering. The believers from Moscow Patriarchate barricaded themselves inside, and they're there on duty 24 hours a day.
And outside the church, another vigil. Four policemen stand on duty beside the building, and they're also there day and night. There's so much bad feeling between the two church communities, and yet the way they worship is almost identical. Father Igor Zagrebelny.
Both the Moscow and Kiev Patriarchate churches have the same religion. We are Orthodox and they are Orthodox. The difference is only in administrative subordination. We are under the Patriarch in Kiev and the Holy Synod of the Kiev Patriarchate. The Moscow Patriarchate believers have their own Patriarch in Moscow and their own Synod.
On the face of it, that administrative detail could be seen as dull and complicated, but it's at the root of this ugly religious row and needs to be explained. The two largest churches in Ukraine are the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Moscow Patriarchate and the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Kiev Patriarchate. Whilst the Church of Moscow is centuries old, the Church of the Kiev Patriarchate is young. It emerged in 1992, after the Soviet Union collapsed and Ukraine became independent. It's still not officially recognized by the international community of Orthodox churches. Back in Pticha, I've come to see Vera Fedchuk, who has lived here for most of her life and has switched to the Kiev Patriarchate in the last 3 years. Putting a very generous dollop of lard and cracklings in the pan, Vera is sharing a recipe for cheese and potato dumplings with me. But her mother and brother would not come to her house to celebrate Pentecost.
We have quarreled because my mother remained in the Moscow Patriarchate. She wants her church services to be conducted in Russian. But we are Ukrainians, and I want them to be in Ukrainian so that I can understand everything. When you go to the Moscow Patriarchate service, you can't understand half of what they're saying. Let them go to Moscow if they want to pray in Old Slavonic. Let all those in the Moscow Patriarchate move to Moscow from our village. We all tried to look after the church and gave money to maintain it. And now they won't let us pray in the church. My mother and my brother keep duty inside the church so that I can't go inside to keep me out.
While the church remains locked and those affiliated with the Kiev Patriarch practice in the grounds, the Moscow Patriarchate believers hold their own service in a garage. The garage is too small to hold everyone for this popular Pentecostal festive service. So the doors are flung open. Vera, a young woman with a small child in her arms, emerges from the garage.
We also live in Ukraine and love our country. My husband is serving in the East. He's defending Ukraine. But since the war started, the whole village is at each other's throats. Neighbors have fallen out. Fathers and sons don't speak to each other.
And this is the political landscape against which the religious fight is being fought, with both sides claiming that they are true patriots. A Ukrainian flag flies from the guardhouse where the Kiev Patriarchate believers pray, and somebody has scrawled graffiti on the house of the Moscow Patriarchate priest saying, "Long live Ukraine." It's no coincidence that the conflict in Ptychia flared up just over 2 years ago, after the annexation of Crimea by Russia and after the fighting in eastern Ukraine started. I'm heading to the capital of Ukraine, Kiev, to search for answers to explain this dispute in Ptychia. I'm standing on the spot where historians claim Russian Orthodoxy began. In front of me is a monument to Duke Vladimir, who is believed to have baptized Russia, a colossal figure with a cross in his hand. I'm meeting here another Vladimir, the church historian Vladimir Burega.
The chronicles tell us that Prince Vladimir told his subordinates those who didn't come to be baptized would cease to be his friends and would be considered his enemies. And obviously people flocked to where the baptism was taking place around the year 988. From that point on, Rus becomes Christian and becomes part of the cultural sphere of Byzantine. And this defines the mentality, culture, writing, and political tradition of people living here. Everything that happens afterwards is defined by this mass baptism ceremony.
According to the historical account of the baptism ceremony, the wooden idols of the old pagan gods were thrown into the river below the hill where the monument to Vladimir stands today. Prince Vladimir was the leader of Kievan Rus. This was the name for a very loose federation of tribes, which lived across a large area we now know as modern-day Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus.
Of course, in the 10th century, there was no city of Moscow. But interestingly, Moscow has always considered itself the descendant of Kievan Rus, continuing its traditions and defining its origins in what is now the capital of modern Ukraine. And today, Russia and Ukraine each consider Kiev a cradle of their statehood, a cradle of their religiosity, a cradle of their culture. That is why, as you see, the struggle that is going on is not just about ideas. It is about the right to claim this ancient heritage.
St. Michael's Cathedral, just round the corner from the monument to Prince Vladimir in Kiev, is the cathedral of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church of the Kiev Patriarchate. It's a magnificent, bright blue building with white columns with gilded domes. The original cathedral was built in the 12th century. It's hard to believe that this building is actually new. In the 1930s, the original church was destroyed on Stalin's orders. In the 1990s, after Ukraine became independent of the Soviet Union, this cathedral was rebuilt. I've come here to meet Father Ivan Sidor. Oh, and that's the bell itself. Father Ivan is taking me up the stairs to the belfry to see the bell which he ran during the Maidan events 2.5 years ago. Maidan is the main square in Kyiv, where large-scale protests against the government took place at the end of 2013 and the beginning of 2014. There were violent clashes between protesters and police, and eventually Ukraine's pro-Russian president Viktor Yanukovych was ousted and had to flee the country from the crowds here. Father Ivan shows me the enormous 8-ton master bell and 50 smaller bells tied together with special ropes and linked to a keyboard instrument called a carillon.
Each bell has its own note. You can even play Celine Dion songs on it. Once I played her My Heart Will Go On from the film Titanic. Only once, of course, because it is not allowed to play such melodies on the holy territory of the monastery.
But during the winter night in 2014, it was not Celine Dion's melody that brought people to the center of Kyiv, but the continuous ringing of church bells.
In the winter of 2014, I was a bell ringer, and I was lucky. I got to ring the warning bells, which called people to the center of Kyiv, because Ministry of Interior forces were going to clear the Maidan Square. It was night, and it was very cold. A lot of the protesters went home, and the government wanted to take advantage of that. I started ringing the bells. When people hear church bells ringing at 1 o'clock in the morning, they are almost genetically conditioned to think that something is on fire.
Many people were killed and wounded during those winter events of 2014. St. Michael's Cathedral, which is very close to the Maidan Square, opened its doors and the wounded and dead were brought here. The Maidan events raised the profile of the Kyiv Patriarchate Orthodox Church and increased its support. But there is a note of caution in this link between the church and the country. Some people think that church life, particularly in the Church of the Kyiv Patriarchate, is now focusing too much on politics. I put this to the very top of the Kyiv Patriarchate Church hierarchy, to 87-year-old Patriarch Filaret. He receives me in his residence in the center of Kyiv. On one of his tables stands a lampshade made out of an army shell. It's a present, he tells me, from those returning from the front.
During the Second World War, when Hitler attacked the Soviet Union, the Russian Orthodox Church rose to defend its country. Any reasonable man would say that this was the duty of the Church to defend the country from the aggressor. Today, we are in a similar situation. Ukraine is the victim of aggression from Russia. Any reasonable man would say that the Church cannot remain indifferent when the people and its parishioners suffer. It is not just political action, but spiritual action too.
Is the schism political or religious?
We have no differences in faith. We are only divided due to political reasons. Putin relies on the support of the Moscow Patriarchate. If it had not been for our Church of the Kyiv Patriarchate, Putin would have already captured the capital of the country, Kyiv, because there would have been no one to inspire people to fight against Putin.
Patriarch Filaret is a popular but controversial figure. He defends the idea of the autocephalous independent Church of Ukraine, but insists there is only one person who can lead it. That's him.
From the very beginning, Moscow wanted to remove me from the leadership of the Ukrainian Church. For them, it is important to remove me, because then they can put an end to the Kyiv Patriarchate Church. And that's why I am not going to give in. There will be new leadership when God calls, when I die. Until then, I will remain a patriarch.
I'm Olga Smirnova, and for Heart and Soul from the BBC World Service, I'm in Ukraine to find out what causes a divide between two main Orthodox churches here.
I'm asking if Russia is really putting pressure on the church associated with the Moscow Patriarchate. I'm heading to the oldest monastery in the history of Ukrainian and Russian Christianity, the Kiev-Pechersky Monastery in the center of Kiev. I walk past the entrance to the caves and catacombs where, since the 11th century, monks and holy people have studied and lived, and their mummified bodies are preserved and displayed for all to see. I'm meeting Bishop Clement, who heads the information department of the Ukrainian Church of the Moscow Patriarch. I ask him if his church is under pressure from Russia.
I'm often asked about this. The last time I personally had any dealings with people from Moscow was about 7 months ago. And even that encounter was during some kind of festivities and had nothing to do with my service in the church. The Ukrainian Orthodox Church is autonomous. By the documents that have been validated by the Ukrainian state, our church is absolutely independent in all areas of its administration, organization, and everything else. No one today can say that Moscow gives me orders or that it influences any decisions of the Synod of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church.
Where is your allegiance? With Kiev or Moscow?
We are loyal to God. I can't say anymore.
Bishop Clement is adamant his church has a lot of autonomy, in spite of its links with the Moscow Patriarchate. That only the nomination of its leader, the Metropolitan, has to be blessed by the Moscow Patriarch. However, others argue it's gaining influence in more subtle ways. In Ukraine, many people have told me that it's promoting the ideology of the Russian world. I ask Father Sergei Gavarun, a former high-ranking priest in the Church of the Moscow Patriarchate and now researcher at Columbia University in the United States, to explain the significance of this ideology.
It is the central apparatus, so to say, in Moscow, which generates ideas which go through the channels to the Russian world outside in order to exercise impact on the politics, on the social situation in the Western countries. And this affected also Ukraine.
The Russian world ideology is based on the perceived common interest of Russian speakers wherever they live. It's also based on old habits and old ways of thinking, which were popular during the time of the Soviet Union. As Sergei Hovarun points out, the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, but old ways of thinking continue to exist.
Those people, they value very much the role of the state in their lives, in the life of the society. They don't trust people. They don't trust freedom. They undermine democracy and they undermine the initiative of the people.
And Sergei Hovarun draws a direct link between this ideology of the Russian world and the conflict in Ukraine.
If we take what is going on in Ukraine, there are families, there were friends who still speak the same language. They still go to the same church, if they go to any church. And all of a sudden, they begin killing each other. How can you explain this? I think to make this step from friendship to killing, one has to have a metaphysical motivation. A motivation that supersedes the pragmatic interests of any personality. It is not pragmatic, it is not reasonable to have war. And I think the Russian world doctrine has provided this irrational, metaphysical component to the situation, to enable people, to encourage people to kill each other, to kill their former friends. And this metaphysical dimension, I think, and I'm afraid, has been provided by the church. Some churches, like the Church of the Moscow Patriarchate, not all of it, but a significant part of it, has supported the idea of the Russian world and has contributed to this war.
I'm in the military hospital in the center of Kyiv. The hospital is about 260 years old. There are a lot of men in military uniform, probably visiting their friends. Father Oleg Sknar shows me pictures of weddings of wounded and sometimes mutilated soldiers and their girlfriends. He has conducted several such weddings in the hospital church over the last 2 years since the beginning of the war. The church of this main military hospital in Kiev is the church of the Moscow Patriarchate.
I witnessed this war not on a TV screen, but in operating theaters and intensive care units. For me, the war is a reality. It is the pain of mothers, the tragedy of families and their wives, their children. I have made no mention of Russian patriarch Kirill in my sermons for about 3 years. It would not be true to say that Kirill officially condones this war. You would not hear him supporting it in the press or in the official statements of the Moscow Patriarchate. But you know, our Holy Fathers used to say, silence betrays God. During the Maidan events, when the future of our country was decided and when Crimea was annexed, Patriarch Kirill was silent. This silence was taken by parishioners as a betrayal of Ukraine.
Have you ever thought of moving to the Church of the Kiev Patriarchate?
At the moment, the Kiev Patriarchate is outside the family of Orthodox churches. It is not recognized. That's why I don't even consider this issue. There is only one canonical recognized Orthodox church in Ukraine at the moment, and this is the church that I belong to.
Some priests in Ukraine, however, are making the decision to change sides. I'm heading south on a rather clunky slow train to the town of Kherson. It's a 12-hour journey. In the parish of St. Barbara in Kherson, Father Sergei Dmitriev switched the allegiance of his whole church from the Moscow to the Kiev Patriarchate.
After the annexation of Crimea, Kherson became the first territory where you could almost smell the war. It is so close to both Crimea and eastern Ukraine. When, in March 2014, columns of armored vehicles started going through the town, it was a big shock for those living in the city. Personally, for me, for my conscience, if I had remained in the Moscow Patriarchate, I would have been on the side of the aggressor, and I would have felt responsible for the death of our citizens.
At a tea party thrown by the parishioners of St. Barbara, Sergei Chorny, a soft-spoken accountant with a deep knowledge of the history of this area, tells me that while he and two-thirds of the parish agreed with the move, his wife chose to stay with the Moscow Patriarchate.
Baptisms conducted in Kiev Patriarchate churches or the last rites, these are not recognized. They say you have to baptize the child again if they have been baptized in the Kiev Patriarchate. The Moscow Patriarchate recognizes baptism by Catholics and Protestants, but not ours.
Although the Church of St. Barbara now belongs to the Kiev Patriarchate, the services here are conducted in a mixture of languages, mostly Ukrainian, with some Slavonic, whilst the Gospel is read in Russian. This is partly a reflection of what a mixed town Kherson has been historically. I've met Russians here who are more fluent in Ukrainian than in Russian, and Ukrainians who speak perfect Russian. But it's also an indication that the dispute between the two patriarchates is not linguistic. At the tea party at St. Barbara, the conversation is also in a mixture of Russian and Ukrainian. One of the parishioners performed on a traditional Ukrainian stringed instrument, the bandura. People here are proud of being Ukrainian and cautious about their big neighbor, Russia. But as far as the church and their faith is concerned, what I find here is that people are happy to mix and match. They would have baptisms in the Church of the Moscow Patriarchate, get married in the Kiev Patriarchate, and have their last rites in a Greek Catholic church, which also has quite a big presence in Ukraine. Ivan, who is a dentist here in Kherson, tells me that he himself occasionally goes to the Moscow Patriarchate Church.
Last week we gave communion to our children in the Church of the Moscow Patriarchate. We were visiting our parents in another town, and there is simply no Church of Kiev, so we went to the Moscow Patriarchate Church.
On both sides of the divide here in Ukraine, I have felt the need for the split to be healed. A recent poll shows that a third of believers in Ukraine think of themselves as just Orthodox, not belonging to either the Kiev or the Moscow Patriarchate. This group of people offer some hope that the divide can be overcome. I meet the academic Professor Konstantin Sigov in his Kyiv office, a publishing house. His walls are lined with books.
I have no illusions that it will happen tomorrow. But we should bear in mind that there are already parishes in Kyiv and other places which already, on principle, position themselves independently away from political issues or party politics. People do not want to be pawns in geopolitical game.
He refers me to a book by the English author C.S. Lewis called Mere Christianity.
A significant section of Orthodox believers in Ukraine today, according to sociological polls, consider themselves just Orthodox. The importance of this position of being mere Christians without particular confessional adherence should not be underestimated.
Sigov hopes that religion can move away from political divisions in Ukraine.
Our faith should not be instrumentalized. Faith should not be on the same plane as a Kalashnikov. On the contrary, faith exists on a different plane.
Despite the conflict that I've witnessed between the two churches, many ordinary priests and parishioners are increasingly seeing themselves as mere Orthodox Christians, irrespective of which patriarchate they belong to. Their hope is that their faith can be removed from the political fault lines of Ukraine today. Faith on the Ukrainian Fault Line was produced and presented by me, Olga Smirnova, for Heart and Soul from the BBC World Service.
Many thanks to the BBC for producing that documentary. It was called Faith on the Ukrainian Fault Line. And thanks to Keith Perron of PCJ Radio for sharing it with us here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Вислухайте радіопередачу «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння по мережі PCJ Radio, яка подається вам англійською мовою з любов'ю і повагою з Британської Колумбії в Канаді. Говорить Павліна. You're listening to «Наш голос» Ukrainian Roots Radio on the PCJ Radio Network, coming to you with love from Vancouver Island in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. I'm your host, Paulette Macquarie, по-українське Павліна. Up next is a singer, songwriter, musician of all sorts. He goes by the name of Sashko. He likes to think of himself as a storyteller, I guess a musical storyteller. And here he is now with a little Ukrainian ditty about red-haired people. It's called Rude.
Дід рудий, баба руда, батько рудий, мати руда, брат рудий, сестра руда, дядько рудий, тітка руда, кум рудий, кума руда, тесть рудий, теща руда, і я рудий руду взяв, бо рудую сподобав.
For the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune into Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio in Vancouver every Saturday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time on AM 1320 CHMB and streaming at am1320.com. Live in Nanaimo Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific Time on CHLY 101.7 FM and online at chly.ca. And elsewhere in the world on the PCJ Radio Network on AM, FM and shortwave radio. In between broadcasts, you can find us online at www.nashholos.com, where you can get podcast links to all three editions of the show. As well, make sure to follow Nash Holos on Twitter and please like our Facebook page. На жаль, ми вже скінчили нашу програму, що часто домові сказати до побачення, але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Слабий сильного не повідить. And our proverb of the week translates as the weak cannot conquer the strong. Well, that about takes us to the end of our program. So to wrap things up, we have Homin Stipio, which means Echo of the Steps, and they hail from New York. Here they are now from a vinyl recording, so it's been around in the library a while, and it is a lively little number called Stukalka. I'm Paulette Demchik-Macquarie, Pokrinska Pavlina, on behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, do побачення.